I declare the meeting open at 5:30. I welcome councillors, management and members of the public in attendance to the City of Melbourne. We respectfully acknowledge that we are meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation. This place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world and a significant meeting place for the Kulin Nation. Melbourne has always been an important meeting place and a location for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. I take this opportunity to notify the members of the public that the meeting is being recorded and will be made available on the City of Melbourne website before close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practical. Should you have any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation of the submission process, please speak with a member of the Council Business Team after the meeting. I request that all mobile phones be turned off for the duration of the meeting. The agenda comprises of 5 reports from management and 1 item of general business. Apologies have been received from Lord Mayor Robert Doyle and Councillor Foster, Ong and Watts. I advise members of the committee and the public that when the committee make a decision on the basis of fewer than 6 members voting in favour of it, the decision may be referred by a councillor to a council decision. Disclosure of conflicts of interest. If any councillor has either a direct or indirect interest, as defined in the Local Government Act of 1989 in relation to a matter to be considered by the committee, please disclose the type and nature of your interest prior to the consideration of the item. Confirmation of the minutes of the previous meeting. I call on the councillor to move a resolution adopting the minutes of open meeting number 76, held on Tuesday the 15th of March. Councillor Oak. I call on the councillor to second that motion. Councillor Pinder-Mortimer. I will now put the motion to the vote. All those in favour of the motion, that motion has been declared unanimous. Matters arising from the minutes of the previous meeting. I ask councillors whether there are any matters arising from the minutes of the previous meeting. No? As at 3 p.m. today, the following submissions have been received in accordance with the Council Conduct of Meeting Laws 2010. In relation to Agenda Item 6.3, Planning Permit Application, TP2015587, 22 Wells Place, South Bank. Request to speak, Paul Little from PP Partners. Items of correspondence from Michael Finn, Tony Penner, South Bank Residents Association, and Jason Lockie. In relation to Agenda Item 6.6, Bicycle Plan 2016-2020, items of correspondence from Adrian Lobo, Tony Penner, South Bank Residents Association. I ask members of the public if there is anyone here who requested to address the committee whose name has not been included in the list just read out. I advise the members that you will be invited to address the committee at the time the relevant agenda item is considered. You will have 3 minutes to address the committee. It is the intention of the committee to adhere to this 3 minutes time limit. And to assist you, please refer to the counter on the wall. Beeps will sound at the completion of 2 minutes, signalling you have 1 minute remaining to conclude your address. Another beep will sound to signal the time allocated to you has finished. Public questions. In accordance with the Council's resolution of 26th of March 2013, a 15-minute period will be provided at the beginning and the end of the meeting for members of the public to ask questions. Questions should not be greater than 90 seconds in duration. And I remind members of the public this is not the time to make submissions. Submitters will be invited to address the committee at the time the relevant agenda item is considered. I now invite questions from the member of the public. Is there any members of the public here? Oh, dear. All right. Well, if you're not going to raise your hand, I will continue. Reports from management. I call on Councillor Leppard to assume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to planning portfolio. Councillor Leppard.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. There are 2 reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio, and that is because Agenda Item 6.1 has been withdrawn. So the first item we'll consider is Agenda Item 6.2, Ministerial Referral Planning Permit Application TP 2015-988 on Royal Parade, Carlton North. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? Is that in order, Councillor Mayne? No presentation. Then I will move this motion in the same terms as appears in the recommendation for management and call on a councillor to second the motion. Thank you, Councillor Mayne. Look, this is quite straightforward. The Princes Park Master Plan has been adopted by Council and it is what it is. This isn't a time to second guess that Master Plan. At arm's length from us, this application has been assessed. The City of Melbourne is both the applicant and the responsible authority, so I have no desire to second guess any of that assessment other than to say that it complies with the Master Plan. Councillor Mayne.
It's good practice for Council's delegations policy to insist that where we are both the applicant and the responsible authority, that it always comes for a decision in open public, so we're not doing any secret, unknown private approvals. It's fairly straightforward in terms of the upgrade of the toilet facilities at Princes Park. We had another one last week with a toy library in Carlton, so we seem to be active with our own planning permits in the past 8 days, and this one is straightforward in accordance with the Master Plan and should be supported.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak on this item? No. In that case, I will put the question. All those in favour of the motion, raise your hands. I declare that carried unanimously. We'll move on to agenda item 6.3, planning permit application TP 2015-587, 22 Wells Place, Southbank. And I call on Jane Birmingham to make a very brief presentation on this item. Thank you.
Right, there we go. Deputy Lord Mayor and Councillors, this is an application for a site at 22 to 24 Wells Place. It's quite a small site. It has an area of 203 square metres. You have the Guilfoyle apartments, the Elm apartments and the 8 apartments that all have a height in the order of 70 metres AHD, consistent with the current mandatory height limit in this area. And there's been a recent approval for this site here of a similar height. Wells Place, as you can see there, is quite a narrow laneway. It's in the order of 4 metres wide, and vehicle and pedestrian access for this development is proposed from that laneway. And here also you can see the zero setback of both the Guilfoyle and the Elm apartments from Wells Place. There is an existing approval for this building. The approved height is 55 metres to the top of the roof, and this application is essentially an amendment to add an additional 3 levels to that building to take the height to 64.25 metres. Basically, it's an addition of 3 levels or almost 10 metres to that building. There's very little change to the presentation of the building to the streets other than for the addition of the 3 levels at the top there. In terms of the layout, essentially there's no change at the ground and basement levels. There continue to be 14 car spaces proposed for this building. In terms of the mix of apartments, there's no change from the approved development at either of these lower levels, where there's 2 two-bedroom apartments proposed. The change happens on the levels from 5 to 8 and 9 to 19. At levels 5 to 8, it's proposed to split what was approved as a single two-bedroom apartment into 2 one-bedroom apartments with the introduction of a terrace in the southwest corner. And at levels 9 to 19, there's the addition of a 1-metre balcony that projects into the previously approved 2-metre setback from Wells Place, and the approved single two-bedroom unit has been split into 2 single-bedroom units. And that's essentially the changes. So it goes from what was 14 apartments to 32 that are now proposed, and they're all now proposed to be single-bedroom apartments from levels 5 upwards. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Any questions for Jane while we have her there? No. I will call on Paul Little, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter, to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Thank you, Paul.
Proprietary Limited, as the permit applicant, I'm a town planner with Planning and Property Partners as a consultancy. Ms Birmingham is taking you to the salient points of this proposal. I don't intend to go through and repeat verbatim what's been put. This application does follow an earlier permit application which was issued through a consent order through the tribunal, where the permit applicant and council officers reached a position of agreeance. Section 3.1 of the officer's report probably provides the most useful comparative analysis between the two proposals. The officer's report is also detailed in relation to its assessment of this proposal in relation to the relevant urban design policies outside of the capital city zone, and indeed DDO Schedule 60, which applies in this instance. The matters raised by objectors to this proposal are addressed pages 37 and 38 of the officer's report. We concur with those responses and indeed provided a response to those objections through the application process. And it's fair to say, in summary, this proposal and the recommendation before you essentially asks the committee to consider an additional height of 9.55 metres, or an increase from 17 levels to 20 or 3 levels overall. And that clear recommendation from the officers is that that proposal is consistent with the provisions of the Melbourne Planning Scheme and indeed will not result in any unreasonable amenity impacts on neighbours. And on that basis, we respectfully request you favourably consider this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Any questions for Paul from councillors? Councilman.
Paul, thanks for coming along and presenting. It's always good to see applicants do that. The reliance on single-bedroom apartments, why was your client so inclined to really crank up the small single-bedders as opposed to having a mix?
The previous proposal involved full-floor apartments, and it is a relatively small site. The difficulty with the floor plans, as I understand it, was that the apartment sizes were in fact quite large as being full floor apartments, and the concern they had was the marketability and in fact the saleability of those apartments relative to their square meterage. This proposal clearly contemplated smaller apartments and effectively split what was a single apartment per level into separate one-bedroom apartments, and naturally they reduced in area. It could be considered that there might be some efficiencies gained in that approach, but this proposal and the recommendation clearly forms the view that the above level 9, that it should remain a full floor plate per apartment, or one apartment per floor plate.
Any other questions? No. Thank you very much, Mr. Little. There being no other submitters on this item, I now call on a councillor to move a motion. Thank you, Councillor. Thank you very much, Councillor Mayne. The motion is moved in the terms of the officer report, officer recommendation. Is there a councillor to second the motion? I'll second the motion. Councillor Mayne.
Thanks, Councillor. But look, it's not with any great joy that I move this motion. I know there's been 33 objections, and some of them are very well argued. But I think the experience we've had in the tribunal previously, both on this site and with other sites, basically say that the reality of the situation is that a permit with appropriate conditions is the best way home here, rather than rolling the dice of another contested hearing at VCAT. So I think it's a tricky one. Obviously, when you've got you never like to see buildings to the boundary. It's a very hemmed-in small site. There's been some other developments nearby which have similar issues. But I do think that the conditions proposed go some way to dealing with some of the objectors' concerns. And on balance, and these things are always a balance question, I think the officer recommendation should be supported.
Thanks, Councillor Main. I will speak as seconder, and I agree with your sentiments. I think this is a pretty shocking planning outcome for the City of Melbourne, and it has to be in my top five or top three worst planning outcome for the City of Melbourne, which I'm nevertheless supporting, but let me explain why I'm supporting it. Look, we previously refused the application that came before this. The first reason for the refusal was very straightforward, and I don't think it's been adequately resolved with the resubmitted application. That was that the development is contrary to the Safer Design Guidelines for Victoria, issued by the Crime Prevention Victoria and Department of Sustainability and Environment 2005, and the relevant clause of the Melbourne Planning Scheme, in that the development does not create an urban environment that enhances personal safety and where people feel safe to live and move in at any time. And there were four other reasons for refusal as well. Now, unfortunately, the direction from the VCAT member when this did go to VCAT was quite clear, and the only way to broker a better than terrible outcome was to go into mediation, and our officers did the very best they could. And the position of the responsible authority, if you like, is that mediated position that came out of VCAT. And the only difference between that mediated position and what we're considering tonight is really the extra height plus a reconfiguration of the dwelling sizes from floors 8 and above, because the condition is that there only be one apartment per floor, which I think is a good improvement. And of course, the height isn't really something to quibble about here. It's quite clear that the full height of the development still fits within the overall 70 AHD height limit for this block. It's still a gross overdevelopment of the site, but we know that given what's happened with neighbouring blocks, and with the neighbouring approvals and the history of VCAT, that we really can't do anything other than support this. It's a pretty terrible situation to be in. Had it been refused, I don't think we could get anything better than this, because the position of the responsible authorities on the record, we probably won't get anything worse than this either. And so I suppose there is an argument that you can run the risk that VCAT may well uphold the refusal, but I think that's actually quite slim as well, given VCAT's history on this one as well. So it's with no great pleasure that I think we're left with no position other than to support this. But I finish as I started by saying that I think this is quite a terrible outcome for good planning in the City of Melbourne. Would any other councillors like to contribute to this debate? Councillor Wood.
Thanks, Chair, for very much the same sentiment that you've just outlined. I'd reluctantly support this, but I sort of just draw attention to the fact that, you know, 2 metre setback from Wells Place, that will now be taken up 1 metre of which with balconies, and I just sort of wonder about the future owners of those balconies and the sort of amenity that they're going to enjoy. I think Councillor Leppert made the point rightly that this is a gross overdevelopment of the site.
Thank you, Councillor Wood. Councillor Pinder-Mortimer.
Just to reiterate your comments, Councillor Leppert, I know the area intimately, and I think it's a gross overdevelopment of that site. Got no other option but to actually go with the team and the officers on this. But I fear for the safety concerns in both Wells Place and Anthony Lane, which I traverse practically every day. Really, we would need to give consideration to how we manage that.
Thank you, Councillor Pinder-Mortimer. Acting Lord Mayor.
Look, I agree with what other councillors have said. I mean, I also will go along with the officer's recommendation, but to be quite frank, I'm just very reluctant to do so, because it is a very gross overdevelopment on a handkerchief-sized piece of land that will not contribute to a good tapestry of the street.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. Following on from Councillor Main's comments at the beginning, actually, that it's better to go with a whole lot of conditions than necessarily refuse it, and that is the reason I believe, or I know that I'm supporting this, and actually thank the officers for their considerable work and the conditions. It is always concerning when you do support a permit to be approved when there are such extensive conditions that, to me, it is highlights all the things wrong with a particular application, and we shouldn't have to be in the position to make the best we can out of a bad situation. Really, developers need to come to the party and actually build buildings for Melbourne and Melburnians, not just for developers' money. And in particular concern, as Councillor Pinder Mortimer has pointed out, is safety. And, you know, the condition number 4 talks about the acting on the crime prevention through environmental design review. Again, we shouldn't have to state this, but we are, and it is really important that this is adhered to, and there's a lot of mention around lighting and safety and other conditions as well. Very important. So I, like others, reluctantly support, but we support because of the considerable amount of work that the officers have put in to put conditions to try and get a better outcome than the application.
Councillor Mann, would you like to close debate?
Not sure whether we should all hold our noses while we vote on this one. This is the least emphatic unanimous vote I think I've ever been involved in. Almost like putting a dirty pair of socks in the laundry basket. But clearly the sentiment is clear here. I thank our acting chair for taking a responsible position here. It's never easy on these sort of situations. The officers have got a position. We've been boxed in by VCAT. You can only go so many ways, and you have to think about what the outcome will be at VCAT, whether you spend the ratepayers' money at VCAT. And on balance, I think we've got to the right position, but I think we've made it abundantly clear that no one's happy about it.
Thank you, Councillor Mann. I put the motion to the vote. All those in favour? I declare that carried unanimously. I now call on Councillor Wood to assume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the environment portfolio.
Thanks, Councillor Leppard. There are 2 reports from management for consideration under the environment portfolio. The first one is agenda item 6.4, the Melbourne Water Flood Management Strategy, Port Phillip and Western Port. And I'll call on Jeff Robinson, Manager of Engineering Services, to make a brief presentation on this item.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, councillors. The report before you tonight seeks your endorsement of Melbourne Water's flood management strategy for Port Phillip and Western Port, and it focuses on the catchment area, which is shown hopefully on this next slide. Please. Yep, thank you. The catchment area, of course, you know, in that area is shown as the greater metropolitan area. It's not just the City of Melbourne, so there's an important differentiation to be made there, because this strategy really is the thing which guides the development of the integrated water management plan, which is currently being undertaken as one of the council actions for this year. The scoping document, as I understand, will be presented in June, and then the final version before the year's end is my take on it. The strategy, as presented to you tonight, is aligned with the state government's floodplain management approach and the emergency arrangements. And a key theme for delivery of the strategy action is the formation of collaborative working arrangements across various authorities. We have been heavily involved in the development of the strategy for some time. An underpinning aim of the strategy is to improve the community resilience to flooding impacts and to better develop mitigation planning. So there's several slides which are, some date back some ways, but hopefully we don't see too many of these. Next one, please. We do see this occasionally with storm surge and high tide events, and we're working in South Bank on drainage systems. Again, not a good look in North Melbourne. And one more, I think. And in Queensbridge Street, we have an item in the works program scheduled to try and alleviate the flooding conditions in that particular area, given the amount of tram works that have just gone through there as well. Melbourne Water has consulted extensively in the development of the strategy, and given its wide impacts forecast by the modelling. So there are several flood models as part of the strategy which you can review in more detail. It's hard to see the granularity on the screen. Next one, please. They are the conditions here, which the detail to go into now would be too much, but the conditions that forecast these are needing of a reasonably good alignment of nature. However, it's starting to happen fairly regularly, and we will be working towards an active program of works to try and mitigate those. The nominated actions in the plan are detailed in the report and will be implemented over a five-year period to 2021. Also there to note is an advisory committee will be in place for the implementation. And with that, councillors, I commend the recommendation to you.
Thanks, Jeff. Any questions for Jeff? Thanks, Jeff. You can take a seat. I'm happy to move the recommendation on screen to call for a seconder. Councillor Oak, Jeff, thank you for covering off that so well. Interestingly enough, obviously water is both a threat and an opportunity. When we see that kind of flood impact in those slides, it's definitely a threat. It can impact on the economic prosperity. It can impact on lives. It can have pretty serious outcomes. Obviously, the relationship with Melbourne Water is a strong one. I think the point made about this being a metro-wide flood management strategy is also key, because a lot of the time the impacts that are happening, which we see, happen in the upper catchment. And so with an organisation like Melbourne Water looking at the metro-wide impact, that often the best dollar is spent further up the catchment than Melbourne itself. I think one of the key changes that I've seen in this, as opposed to previous flood management strategies, is the quite obvious links to climate impacts and the sort of intensity, the frequency, and even the changing in sort of 100-year flood measurements and what that means for our drainage systems. City of Melbourne is obviously very much linked to Melbourne Water in that we manage the local drainage network. And indeed, a lot of the placemaking that we're undertaking too with Lincoln Square and University Square and the like have a relationship to trying to head off some of that overland flooding events that occur. So I think the strategy is a good one. It's obviously at a very high level, but in reading the strategy, I can't see sort of any conflicts with what we're trying to achieve here at the City of Melbourne. I know our very own Jeff Lawler was very heavily involved in this process, as was Jeff Robinson, and as also some of our former employees. So I think we're intimately working with Melbourne Water, and you can see that in the sorts of strategies that are being produced. Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Councillor Wood. I support the recommendation from management. I agree with the presentation from Councillor Wood as well. I think it's really important, especially, and it's a theme that will run into the agenda item that I'm chairing in two items' time, about collaborative work and working across levels of government, but also not only state and local government, but across municipal boundaries. And I think that this strategy is an example of exactly why we need to be not only collaborative but proactive, and especially around climate change effects on our community. And one of the most important things, I think, in this strategy is the data and about and prioritising our actions around what we know and what we're, you know, what are the scenarios telling us. But the priorities for action are driven by data, and that's really important. I think that the City of Melbourne prides herself on working that way anyway, so it's good to be collaborating with other levels of government on around these issues. The other part that's really important in this strategy is the information for all stakeholders, and there's a lot of data in this already, a lot of information on the public record about the implications for flooding, and let's just make sure that, you know, the proof is obviously in the reality, and that as this evolves over the next 5 years, that we are responding as it says that we will in this strategy. Anyway, I endorse the plan.
Thanks, Councillor Oak. Any other speakers to the motion? Councillor Mayne.
You'd like to thank Melbourne Water for leading this process. 38 different public bodies, very complex, a 14-person advisory committee. It was good that City of Melbourne, through Jeff Lawler, was on that, involved. Usually these sorts of processes will see some of the detail come out, because you can't satisfy everyone all of the time. Victoria has a more complicated governance model than other states. So in Queensland, where the councils, many of the councils directly run the water and sewerage authorities, there's less other bodies to deal with. So this is an area where collaboration is important, and I think it's been a good process. I get a sense Melbourne Water's got their mojo back. They're driving this process, and I too am very pleased to see the mention of climate change and the impacts of that front and centre. We've seen some silly policies at the national level, the ag strategy, and these things that don't even mention it, which is a sort of a silly political position, 20 years out of date from the science. So it's good to see this is just a sensible, fact-driven policy with good collaboration, and that we can work within that to deliver our side of the bargain going into the future.
Thanks, Councillor Mann. Any speakers against? Any other speakers too? I'll just very briefly too note that further to that collaboration, before I've put this to the vote, that the fact that we're being asked to endorse the strategy tonight, I think, is another clear sign of that collaborative effort with all the agencies working together, which is extremely beneficial when you're considering something which doesn't recognise council boundaries and, in fact, can impact right across the board. So really good to see it from a holistic sense. With that, I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour? That is carried unanimously. Agenda item 6.5 is our next one, delivering an innovative future for the Smart Blocks program. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No? Any questions? Councillor May.
I just have one, Councillor Wood. Just to Ian Shears, if we do sell smart blocks, which is obviously what the proposal is here, what protections are there so you don't get a conflicted sort of commercial provider who turns it into a vehicle for their own product, if you like, as opposed to the broader public policy education sort of elements to smart blocks in its formative years?
Yep, certainly, Councillor. I guess there's probably two or three different levels at which we're having a look at and how to ensure that we get really good service into the future. To begin with, we've gone through an incredibly thorough evaluation of the Smart Blocks program, so we've got a great handle on what's needed now and also what are the opportunities for the future and why we're actually proposing to go out to deliver a better offer than we can through sort of council. So we've got a great deal of clarity on what the essential and suggested needs are for the future. And our evaluation process to have people come in and bid for this is going to be based around, you know, delivery of those essential needs and also suggested needs and also how that, you know, a very good sort of business model is going to be applied to it. So our criteria for assessment is going to include the essential elements of the program as it stands now and as it moves into the future. So a successful bidder will have to deliver on those. The judging panel is going to have a range of experts from the industry, from startups, from the strata sector, as well as from local government. So that process will be incredibly rigorous and any suggestions or proposals will be interrogated really quite lively through there so that we do have a way of ensuring both those essential needs plus a good business is going to come through there. In addition to that selection process at the beginning, there's going to be a two-year period of transition away, and through that two-year period we're going to have the opportunity to, you know, really have a close look at what is being done, have close, accurate monitoring through that period as well. So there'll be, if you like, that two-phase approach. So it's the beginning, then at the end is going to have that period through there. That transition will also enable a continuing and an ongoing relationship between City of Sydney and Melbourne and the successful bidder at the beginning. So we've got a really good line of sight on what occurs and how that's progressing, and also to act as a mentor through that period so that we can ensure that we're successfully supporting the launch of this into the future. And I think sort of, you know, within, you know, basically sort of within that sort of line of sight that we've got, we're giving ourselves the best chance. So the full IP transfer doesn't occur until we've had a successful two-year period there. So, you know, I think we're giving ourselves the best chance to get the right person or right company on board to begin with, and then to ensure that there's a successful transition and launch into the future.
Any further questions for Mr. Shears? Acting Lord Mayor.
Ian, I'm just a little bit confused or curious more than anything on what type of company would take on smart blocks.
We were sort of part of the sort of evaluation. We went out and did some market testing, and there's a range of not-for-profit and sector organisations and startups that have expressed an interest in this to date. So we fully expect that there will be some, you know, sort of organisations that have, you know, are quite capable of pitching a successful program, and then also quite capable of delivering, and it fits within, if you like, the remit of their organisations to do so.
Just one more. Financially, how long is a piece of string, I suppose, but, you know, how viable does a company like this have to be to take on a project so new?
Well, look,
for 2 years.
Well, look, I mean, I think certainly the evaluation process will be looking very rigorously at the business plan. So certainly they will have to fulfil the requirements of the panel which assesses their viability as a business. The if you like, the market research and the evaluations have given an indication that the program itself has a number of avenues to generate finances for the company into the future, and there's a range of ways through subsidies, fee for service, that type of thing. So we've identified that it is a viable option to head off to itself.
Any further questions? Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Mr. Shears. Sorry, the bit that I'm just wanting to make sure is that we're still on top of the original aim or the original purpose of smart blocks, which was to create energy efficiency in the apartment building sector. So how do we track that through handing it over? Because I assume we'll still be asked by the community, what's our role in...
Absolutely.
And how do we actually know that it's making a difference?
And I think sort of within what we probably look to both those essential needs and as well as the suggested needs, that within there, that monitoring and making that information available is a core element of what the business needs to do into the future. And I think, you know, incredibly important within apartment buildings, there are an ever-expanding, growing sector becoming more and more important. So we want to make sure, and I think for us, data is one of the huge challenges that we've got to find out what's being used where and when, and so inherent within the essential needs of this project going over is that availability of data.
Any further questions? Thanks, Ian. You may take a seat.
Thank you.
With the massive change of a capital P for program, I am happy to move the recommendation on screen. And I call for a seconder to that. Councillor Oak, thank you. So I think those questions are really good. This program's been excellent. Obviously, apartments are a huge focus for us in terms of emissions reduction, but you look at it too, over 70-80%, depending on the figures that you look at, of people in the city of Melbourne live in apartments. I think the other thing too, sort of noting the report and looking at the ongoing monitoring and performance, that you know, there's a potential then for that new provider to, you know, submit an annual smart box update, quarterly, whatever it might be, and I think that's sort of identified as some of the attributes that we might look at. I know this program is very well designed and has been working very well nationally. I know too that this was an interim measure for City of Melbourne to take this on. I think it was, you know, such a valued program that was the right move. But I do endorse going out to market to see what comes back to us. I'm confident with those sort of additional bits of information around that, the fact that the seed funding is going to be released in a couple of tranches, the fact that we'll have an opportunity to effectively oversee the initial 2 years of the provision of that service. If it's not satisfactory, if they're not meeting the targets, then you know, we can simply wind that contract up and take it back and move on to another market process or indeed another option. But when you look at the sort of ongoing cost increase for City of Melbourne to completely run this ourselves, you know, in the order of sort of $250,000, I think this is a wise move in terms of managing council resources properly, given that this is a national program. So City of Sydney and obviously City of Melbourne the other people who are represented on that panel, I think we'll get some really good applicants based on that information gathering process that's already happened. I think the intellectual property that's been developed as part of this process is fantastic. I really hope that we get a worthy applicant who takes this program on. I think it would be an absolute feather in the cap of any organisation to be able to grab a program like Smart Blocks and run it nationally. Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Councillor Wood. I'm concerned that I often start these things like, gosh, this is a problem that came to council many years ago, and I remember in 2008, first elected, I think one of the first queries was from apartment building tenants in the Docklands saying, how do we become more energy efficient? And I was like, why aren't we holding these, why don't we have workshops, and how are we helping apartment tenants or owners to become more energy efficient? And I think the response, quite rightly, from the officers were, it's not really our role to run workshops all the time, and there's a lot of great products and a lot of great information out there or other programs. The one thing that we could do is this one-stop shop of information, a clearinghouse. And so the Smart Blocks program evolved over time from that need of our residents to understand how they could be better and more energy efficient, and our role as a provider of information without actually having to do all of the work. So I think, as Councillor Wood has said, the IP that has been developed in the creation of Smart Blocks and the collaboration with Strata building owners and City of Sydney has created a great product and a great resource point residents towards. I mean, it'd be great if in the first place the apartments were being built in a more energy efficient way, and it'd be great that in the future we wouldn't have to have such a program because the buildings in our city were already well energy efficient, but they're not, and so we still have a need for this program, and we still will have residents that will want to know how they can turn their buildings more energy efficient. So we do need the program. I understand the reasons why we can't operate it ourselves, and I think that this is a smart solution to that particular concern. So I thank officers for coming up with a solution, and I look forward to seeing who does come forward to run it, and I think there are certainly a lot of opportunities and a lot of companies out there that would surely be right to run such a program.
Thanks, Councillor Oak. Any other speakers? Councillor Mayne.
I would also like to thank the Commonwealth Government, I think it was the Gillard Rudd years, for the inspiration of a $1.1 million grant to Strata Community Australia, realising they couldn't build a vast bureaucracy themselves and do this themselves, but they partnered up with the right people and also then partnered up subsequently with City of Melbourne and City of Sydney. So it's a good enabling grant initially from the feds, embraced by an enlightened City of Melbourne Council the previous term, and then working in partnership to good effect to seed it, give it a good brand, a good reputation, and then now set it off sailing into some permanent hands that will professionally grow it, and sort of recognising that it's a little bit beyond our bailiwick to run something like this program in the longer term. So I think it's well done. I look forward to seeing the outcome. I'm not surprised to hear that there's a lot of interest. I think that a lot of not-for-profits are in this space, and credibility has been built up in Smart Blocks. It's an obvious area, given the densification of our cities, and increasingly more and more people are living in apartments. We all probably could have done a bit more at the development application or permitting process, and I think we still do have some room to move there to get better outcomes, so we're not sort of backfilling this. And even if we wanted to talk about, well, we're not just washing our hands, what else could we do in this space? Well, whether it's rating rebates or things like that for best practice. There's a few other policy tools still left for us to remain involved in this space. But that's, I guess, a different topic for a different day. So all up, well done to the officers for working up this process. I really like to see it when we collaborate with the City of Sydney. It's very easy for politicians to get all competitive with other institutions or comparable organisations. So love to see collaboration. Love to see it with Sydney. Well done, Sydney and Melbourne, and look forward to seeing a good outcome. and then a long-term solution after the initial two-year effective trial period.
Thanks, Councillor Mayne. Any against this motion? Any other speakers too? No. Very quickly, I can't resist. I think this program's fantastic because what it does is it builds a business case for something which is actually really, really smart anyway, hence the name. You know, to have more efficient buildings, but to do that in a way which is reasoned, logical, and which has support, not just online support, but a whole range of support mechanisms to it. But this also builds a sense of community in apartment towers, and that has so many other benefits to all the sorts of programs that we want to target into our community, and that's definitely the business of local governments. I think it's a really strategic move, though, to look at the market delivering this component, this very sort of focused service, and that allows our officers to jump back up to the strategic level and think about all the other things that Councillor Mayne so rightly mentioned that we can drive into this space to help programs like this flourish even further. So with that, I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour? That is carried unanimously. And I'll now hand over to Councillor Oak to assume the role of Chair of the meeting in relation to the Transport Portfolio.
Thank you, Councillor Wood. There's one report from management under consideration for consideration under the Transport Portfolio. Oh, and it's gone. No, and the Bicycle Plan 2016 to 2020. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? Any questions for Mr. Robinson? No? Well, therefore, I would like to acknowledge, as the Acting Lord Mayor did, the two submissions that we have received in relation to this. And before I do that, and now I will move the recommendation on the screen. Oh, there you go. Councillor Woods, straight off the mark.
Sorry.
You don't want to... Not the Deputy Chair. It's great. We've got enthusiasm to support the bike plan, and I believe it's not because we want to end the meeting early. It's because we actually do support the bike plan. And as the mover, I would like to speak to the motion, of course, being heavily involved in the development of this bike plan and the current bike plan. And before I begin, I would like to thank the huge amount of work that the officers have put in to the development of this. It's come in very early, you know, it's for 2016-2020. It doesn't kick off until the start of July, but here we are approving the bike plan a few months before that, and that's great. And I think that we didn't do that last time, and we're doing it this time very well. We've had a lot of consultation and a lot of discussions with a lot of stakeholders, and we've received a lot of media, and I think the conversation out there in the public arena is appropriate for a plan such as this. But I would like to thank Jeff and Andrew and Ross and Fleur, who is no longer here but did a lot of work in this document that is before us, and Gordon and Veronica, and I'm sure I've left someone out, but I wanted to point out the number of staff that have contributed to the bike plan, because there has been some discussion around the amount of money that we're spending on a bike plan, and we need to note that that's just about capital works, where we actually have invested quite significantly in people who help deliver the bike plan, and that is about the strategy as well and responding to things that are not just within this bike plan but other issues that come to us at the City of Melbourne around bikes. I have use these lines a few times this week when speaking to the media about the bike plan, and I think the most important or most exciting thing I believe about this bike plan is it's not just central city focused. It was really important in the current bike plan that we focused on large commuter network joining up large parts of the network, and that's really important that we did that. But if we want Melbourne to actually be a true bike city, we need to also invest in our neighbourhoods, so the Carltons and North Melbournes and Kensingtons, all of the suburbs of the municipality we need to invest in. And the reason behind that is, as we talk about being a bike city, and we're not going to be a bike city like Copenhagen or like Amsterdam if we don't start teaching our families to ride the short distances to school or short distances to the shops. And that's about making it safer. It's not just about saying you need to ride your bike. We actually need to provide the infrastructure and the facilities on the streets between their homes and the shops and the schools. And really importantly, in the document, you'll see that we talk about working with other groups that work with new migrants, new community, getting them more familiar with the roads around their neighbourhoods, but also working with schools and bike advocates, people who ride their bike, understanding which are the routes that we need to provide the safe infrastructure on. So it is a plan, but it is a live document. It is a document that will continue to change when we have more conversations about where these paths should be and how we should implement them. So I'm very excited about that particular part. But it doesn't miss out the CBD. It does talk about joining up parts of the network that are, that will make the commuter network even safer and encourage more people to ride to the city, because that is important to get to our 1 in 4 target. We need to actually get people to ride to work rather than drive or use tram or public transport, and we can only do that if we do connect up the main network as well. So really important that we're doing that, and really important that we are investigating another east-west link in the city. We do need to do some investigative work, and obviously Metro Rail project is upon us, and we need to understand where those designs will lead before we can I think really come forward with another east-west link. But it is needed. We do have the numbers in the of cyclists in the city needing to get to other sections of the city, not just on Latrobe Street, and so we do need to look at another east-west link, and that work will be done as through the next 4 years. So I commend the motion. I thank officers again, and Councillor Wood, would you like to speak a seconder?
Thank you, Chair. I never thought I'd hear a Greens councillor calling for an east-west link. but the reason I jumped in on this, and apologies to the Deputy Chair, is because I think it's fantastic. And you look at the 7,000 contributors in 2015 in May that informed this draft plan, again, sort of referring to some of the previous items being very data and research driven. There's no difference with this, the amount of data that's been gathered on transport modes, and in particular, obviously, people using cycling. And as Councillor Oak highlighted, the clear thing is that if you make it safer, more people do it, and great cities around the world are bringing different forms of transport into their city, you know, walking, bikes, public transport. That's the sort of thing that makes a city great. You sort of twin that with how much congestion costs us from a business sense. And, you know, it's very easy to get sort of, is this anti-car? No, it's not. It's actually pro-livability. This is about making sure that every option is available for people to choose forms of transport which make the city perform better from an amenity perspective, but also are really good for people themselves. I mean, you know, you talk about congestion, but then you talk about things like obesity and health and, you know, getting on a bike, walking, doing these sorts of things, actually using your body to do what it was intended to do, is actually good for your health. So good for the air quality of the city, good for people, good for the economics in terms of you looking at the expenditure of people that spend more time on foot or on cycles, on bicycles around the city. But I think the other important part of this that Councillor Oak has highlighted is those commuter routes are really, really vital. You've got to get those right. It's not just about the CBD, as Councillor Oak said. It's about how do we bring people from suburbs outside our municipality into the city in a safe and quick manner. So very happy to support this.
Thank you, Councillor Wood. Are there any speakers against the motion? No. Are there any other speakers too? Councillor Main.
Thanks, Councillor Oak. Look, I'm very enthusiastic about the bike plan as well. Haven't had as much involvement as others over the journey as a new chair in this portfolio. But the numbers are very clear. I mean, it was 6% of morning trips in 2008. It's now up to 17%, projected to hit 25%. So we're talking exponential growth here, and there is an element of build it and they will come, but there's also an element of they are coming and we must make it safe. And we must make it effective and efficient and consistent. And so the number of elements of the plan, the extra 2,000 hoops, I think is very important. We don't want bikes tied up against trees or signposts. That will potentially displace a little bit of on-street parking, but look, let's get used to that. There's going to be less on-street parking, and on-street parking is the least efficient use of street space. So that's going to be managed down. Obviously, we've changed our goal in terms of safety from the draft plan. We're now going for a zero injuries plan, and That's obviously an aspirational goal and is noteworthy. The facts are that we've been tracking at around 65 serious accidents a year, but that's been steady in an environment where the number of cyclists and trips has been rising. So the percentage danger is certainly falling, and we are saying that this is a very serious issue and we want to aim for zero and keep managing that down as far as possible. Plugging the gaps, whether it's Haymarket or the Convention Centre on Clarendon Street or Albert Street after Nicholson or an exhibition or Queensbury Street between Flinders and the Yarra, there are some noteworthy gaps and we've identified them in the plan to invest heavily in getting some seamless connections between all of the main routes. And then on the east-west, I too am excited and probably was a little bit too excited in some public discussions last week in talking about Collins Street or Flinders Street from potential east-west. I should have probably mentioned that, Flinders Lane might be another option that we looked at, but we're not obviously getting specific. We're saying we're going to have a general look over the next 4 years and come up with the best option. But I agree that Latrobe Street is too far north. We need something closer to the river. And we shouldn't be too surprised when something bold comes up in a couple of years, because this is just the way that it's going. We haven't actually bitten the bullet in terms of the southbound lane on Princes Bridge, and we're not specifically saying we're going to do that in the short term, but I signal that's obviously an ongoing question for us there. We've got hot competition between through traffic and pedestrians, the public transport system, and cyclists. It's probably the number one pinch point in the city. It's had been a great success in terms of the cycling lane going northbound, but we haven't yet made the bold decision to do that going southbound. So thanks to all the officers for their excellent work. I think it's a bold plan. I think it got a surprising amount of publicity and public discussion from my point of view, but people are interested in cycling. There's a lot of cyclists out there and everyone's keen to talk about it. And the fact that we actually don't have anyone here tonight arguing the toss on the detail is an absolute credit to the consultation process that has been run, where everyone, 7,000 people through Participate Melbourne, the draft plan, 150 submissions, media discussion, it's been done so thoroughly that everyone is quite content with the outcome and no one is in here yelling at us about a clause here or a clause there or the overall tenor. Would have liked to have had the Herald Sun here to set them straight on a couple of things on their editorial on Saturday, but even they're not here to have a crack. So that says to me that we've pretty much got the balance right, and it should be a unanimous vote tonight. Let's get on with it.
Thank you, Councillor Main. As Deputy Transport Chair, I believe you're well up to speed on the bicycle plan, and I thank you. Are there any other councillors who'd like to speak for the motion? Councillor Pinder-Mortimer.
I'd just like to say a couple of things, really. I agree with Stephen. It's a very bold plan. It's great. However, bicycle connections between municipalities, as cited by Port Phillip, I think it's very important, particularly along St Kilda Road. And secondly, no doubt there are social, health and environmental benefits, but I worry also about the impact on retail in years to come. Even though it's cited in there that there should be an increase of or some percentage, but overall a great plan and really, really well done to the team. Brilliant.
Thank you. Councillor Leppert.
Thank you, Chair. You can't have a 2016 to 2020 bike plan without a 2012 to 2016 bike plan, and so can I, on behalf of many, thank you for your advocacy in getting us to this point, as well, of course, as the many staff who have been working so very hard and so with so much detail over this entire journey, especially Jeff Robinson, of course, and his team. This bike plan, though, is a vast improvement on the previous bike plan, excellent though the previous bike plan was, and the four-year action was that we should be drafting this plan up with extensive consultation ready for adoption in March 2016. It's now March 2016, so we've fully implemented that four-year goal, assuming, of course, a four-vote tonight. And I think that's a marvellous thing. That's far preferable to doing it any other way. I agree with Councillor Main that having not have any submitters here rock up today. There's two very good written submissions, but not having any submitters rock up today to argue the toss on the consultation is testament, I think, to the health of that consultation process. It has been very long and very thorough, and anyone who has wanted to have their say has been able to have their say. The draft that came out earlier, I think that might have spooked a few people because they thought that that was going to be 99% what the final version might look like. But if you look at the penultimate version and the final version that we've got here and the changes that have been made following that enormously comprehensive consultation process, proves just how genuine and thorough that process was. So I agree with Councillor Main that the consultation process here has been something that we can be very, very proud of. And it really is a very, very detailed document, and I think it's a very integrated document in a way that's a vast improvement on the previous versions as well. So that's excellent. I just want to add one new thing that hasn't been mentioned yet. I think it's possibly from those who might not have read the document in full, but it's quite easy to find the nearest figure and quote that as the overall spend that the City of Melbourne is looking to in 4 years. Yes, at Attachment 4, there's a $9.88 million four-year figure. That's pretty much mostly capital works. It doesn't take into account any staff time, but most importantly, it doesn't take into account any of those projects that we haven't yet been able to cost. Councillor Main again has mentioned a few of those, and we don't know how to cost these things yet, but the idea that you just divide $9.88 million by four and that's what the annual average spend is going to be of the City of Melbourne, I think is completely wrong. We're actually looking at a order of magnitude many times more than that. And in later years, you might see, you know, back in the 2012 figures, maybe order of magnitude is a slight exaggeration. But it includes those important, you know, central city, east-west links. It includes southbound Princes Bridge. We need to work with other agencies. We don't have full control over the transport network here at the City of Melbourne, and try, though, some might, for us to articulate exactly what we're going to do on every single road inside the municipality. We have very little control over many of them, and so we must work in partnership with VicRoads and other agencies, and I think that we've been doing a lot better with that over the course of the last 4 years, and that again is testament to the very hard work of the staff. So it's not a $2 million per year bike plan. It's a lot more complicated than that, but complicated in the best possible way, and I'm sure that we'll continue to build on those fantastic statistics that have already been mentioned in this debate. I commend it as well.
Thank you, Councillor Leppert. Would any other councillors like to speak to, for, against? No? Then as mover, I would just like to close by thanking my colleagues for far more eloquently than me on the back of flying in from WOMAD, speaking for the bike plan that you know I'm very passionate about. But I mentioned actually in a previous agenda item that I'd mention it now, but joined up government is incredibly important. And I think one point that has been made, but I'll point out again that we can't do this alone and we shouldn't have to do it alone. And that whilst the City of Melbourne wants to be a leader and wants to support sustainable transport in our bike plan or our walking plan or other transport strategy modes that we talk about, we need the state government, we need the federal government, we need other stakeholders to play their part too. And we do talk about the priority of St Kilda Road as one that we've moved to the front of the queue. It's where the highest rates of car dooring exists. It is incredibly important that we get on with building the full length of St Kilda Road bike lanes, but it won't happen without support from the state government or other levels as well. And again, going to the issue of the budget, it shouldn't certainly not be only on the City of Melbourne to implement that project, and I don't believe it will, but I think it's important to point out that it is a priority and one that we won't be doing alone, and it is a cross-boundary issue as well. And I think it's important that Councillor Pindamotua raise that as well, that it's not just about working with the state government, it's working across boundaries. And we are doing a lot of work. Jeff and I have been in many meetings with Yarra and Stonington and Port Phillip relatively recently, and we have identified the priority issue, cross-boundary, joining up the bike network issues, and we've all committed to making sure that we work on them together. So that's really important work that that many of us have said. It's a really important work to get people to ride that 7 to 10 to 14 kilometres into the city to not only free up road space for those that may have to drive their cars, but also free up valuable space on public transport, because it's quite squished if you try and get on a tram or a train from Kensington or North Melbourne in the morning. Very important. But I would like to thank all of our partners that have contributed. I know we have already, but it is important that we do work with the Bike Network, with Bike Network Victoria, with the Bugs, with RACV, with the retailers on this plan, and I know that we'll continue to do so. And on that point of the 2,000 hoops, it isn't just, I don't believe it will just be about just putting 2,000 hoops randomly across the city. That's not how we do it anyway. It's on it's on request a lot of the time, and a lot of the requests are coming from the retail sector, from our businesses. They've seen the number of bikes outside of their shops chained to the trees or to the rails, and they know that their clientele, that their customers are riding the bikes. So it is certainly an economic driver as well to have as many bike hoops at the front of their property. And we talk about the economic benefits of cycling, and we have a very small example up on Lygon Street, and I'd like to repeat that more so across the city in that 2,000 hoop program. And so I look forward to hearing from more retailers or from more businesses that would like a bike corral in front of their place as well. Anyway, on that note, I will put it to the vote. All those in favour, raise their hands. It's passed unanimously. I now hand back to Susan Riley, the Acting Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. There is one item of general business to be that does conclude all the reports from management, and there is one item of general business to be considered. Agenda item 7.1, notice of motion, Councillor Oak, responding to emerging technologies and trends associated with transport. I now call on Councillor Oak to move the motion in her name.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. I move the motion in my name.
Get back on. I call for a councillor to second that motion. Councillor Main. Councillor Oak, would you like to speak to your motion, please?
Yeah, I think the motion details exactly what this is about. We asked management in the previous annual plan to provide a report about emerging technology and how the City of Melbourne intends to respond to it. That action was put in there as a result of us being contacted quite regularly about, you know, how do we respond to not just Uber, but other, there's a lot of new technology out there tracking whether how people are walking in the city, how people are parking in the city, how people are driving to the city. There's a lot of new technology in apps, online, and in other sort of sharing economy type emerging technologies that are out there. And I think that the City of Melbourne should be leading in taking the opportunities as they come to us, rather than necessarily sitting back and not making a comment. And so this report that was commissioned came back to us as councillors, and it's excellent. I believe it, as it says in the report, it's one of the first, or if not the first, first of its kind reports in Australia to a city council. How should the City of Melbourne respond to these emerging technologies? And I think some of the recommendations about how we do so are really smart. And I think one of the smartest things about it is that it's not necessarily a one policy approach. The technologies are changing all the time, that it actually probably would be quite bad to only have one policy or one response. And the 6-monthly review that that is put there at number 3 that you can't see on the screen, but having a review process on a regular basis about how new technology is being responded to and how we're communicating with people out there in our community who are at the forefront of technology is really smart and really important. So I look forward to reading those reviews, and we might need to write some actual policy about how we respond, and that's what the report talks about as well. But it's it crosses a lot of council, and not just around Future Melbourne, the transport strategy and development and the smart city approach that we have here, but it's also about resilient Melbourne and road safety, and it's about a whole lot of other things. So it's important that we're on top of it from a strategic point of view. So I recommend that council take note of the actions and recommendations in the report, and I look forward to receiving those reports.
I would the seconder like to speak to the motion.
Yes, I think it's also an excellent report, and I think it's good work by Councillor Oak to bring it to Council's attention by way of motion, and therefore put it on the record, put it in the agenda, put it in the minutes, audio of this discussion, and I know I'll certainly be giving it a push on Twitter and elsewhere. It's a fast-moving world, And the temptation for councils sometimes can be to be stuck in the way things have always been. So to be, I think, I'm not certainly not aware of any other council which has commissioned a report like this, to get it out in a nimble way, and then to make it public, and then to endorse it, and then effectively to identify Future Melbourne 2, transport strategy, developer forums and smart city approach as different areas of council which should look at this report and take it into consideration, is a good use of the report's resource and knowledge. Too often reports get commissioned and then sink, and I think this is one where it won't sink. It is good quality material. It was a good move by Councillor Oak to commission it and for City of Melbourne to be associated with it, not to necessarily write it ourselves, because this is something where it does need those sort of external experts to pull it together, and I think the Institute for Sensible Transport should be very proud of what their Dr. Elliot Fishman has produced for us, and we'll certainly be talking about it far and wide in the period ahead as we all challenge the sharing economy and the technology drivers that are making transport and the wider economy such a different world to navigate going forward.
Thank you, Councillor. Are there any speakers against the motion? Are there any speakers for the motion? Councillor Leppard.
Thank you, Acting Lord Mayor. Very briefly, can I concur with the previous two speakers and thank Councillor Oak for commissioning this report in the first place. She put it in there as an annual plan action, and hey presto, a report comes out the other end, and its implications are wide-reaching, and I'm sure that all of the policy makers, not just councillors but throughout the City of Melbourne and elsewhere, will be taking absolutely great interest in this report. I found it fascinating and read it all in one go. I'm sure many others have as well. Let's see where it leads. Well done, Councillor Oak.
Thank you. I now put the motion to the vote. Oh, sorry, Councillor Wood.
Sorry, Acting Lord Mayor. I won't add too much more to that, but I think what it does is it poses some interesting questions. You know, the sharing economy, user pays, but, you know, even questions around driverless cars sort of being this saviour of everything. But then it talks about, yes, you could reduce on-street parking, but does it reduce congestion with return trips that might not be full? Those are really interesting questions. I agree with Councillor Oak, and I think the report is great that we're asking these questions, that the world's most livable city isn't shying away from them. As Councillor Main said, it's probably a local government thing to sort of, you know, shy away perhaps from some of these questions and some of this rapid change, but I think it's credit to the organisation and credit to Councillor Oak that this was one of our actions and has resulted in such a great report that asks some really interesting questions right throughout the document. Not that it has answers for all of those questions, but that's you know, the benefit of this report, that those questions will be put.
The item of proposed urgent business. And as there is no public, there will be no public questions. Where? Ashley, would you like to ask a question? We won't shame you. Thank you. If that is the case, I would close the meeting, and I'd like to thank members of the management and staff and the media for their interest and attendance, and declare the meeting closed at 6:43
6:43.